right, welcome to episode 51, the Bobbycast. Thanks for listening on iHeartRadio or iTunes. And thanks to our sponsors, 1-800-Flowers and Blue Apron. So without those guys, we would not be able to do this. And with us is songwriter Ross Kopperman. Hey, boy, good to see you.
Hey, Bobby, good to see you, buddy.
So before we kind of get into talk about stuff, I just kind of want to run through and let people know kind of what we're dealing with here with Ross. So I'm going to play some of Ross's songs here because Ross is a world-renowned songwriter, written songs like... And we're going to get to all these. Like Keith Urban, John Deere, how about... Glory, Georgia Line, Confession, Low Cash, I Know Somebody, Kenny, Setting the World on Fire, Luke Bryan, Strip It Down. You have a lot. There's, I mean, one, two, three. How many number ones do you have?
14.
You have 14 number ones. Golly. So there's a lot, and we'll get to a lot of these as we go. You know, as I start to look at these songs here, for example, this one, Setting the World on Fire. And so I've told this story before, and I didn't know it was a secret, or it just could have came out of my mouth, because Kenny never told me it was a secret when he told me this. So Kenny and I are sitting around, and he says, "Hey, you know, because Setting the World on Fire was just about to be number one." And Kenny and I are sitting next to each other, and he goes, "Hey, you know, this was never going to be a single." And I was like, really? He goes, yeah. He goes, Pink got pregnant, so she had to come off the road.
You know, I've never heard that story.
Oh, you don't know this story?
That is crazy.
You wrote this song. You don't know
that? I didn't know that.
Okay, so then I'm going to tell you this story, then you tell me about how the song came together. Okay?
Wow, yeah.
Okay, so Kenny and I are sitting here, and he goes, about to play the song overhead. And he said, hey, look, you're never going to believe this. And Kenny curses a lot. He's never going to believe this. Beep, you know? I'm like, what is it? And he goes, this was never going to be a single. Not because I didn't love the song.
Yeah.
He said, but because Pink was about to go on tour and she wanted to put her own music out, and she didn't want to have two things at once hitting each other.
Okay.
And so because she got pregnant, she pulled...
It's all coming back, yeah.
She pulled everything off the radio, and they were like, hey, go ahead, and if you want to make that a single, make that a single.
And it yes, okay.
Had she not become pregnant...
It probably would have never been a single.
At least not then.
Yeah.
And so I was like, wow, he never said there was a secret, right?
I don't think I realized she got pregnant, and that's why...
And so I'm thinking, wow, I know this great story, but I keep secrets. You know, when you have friends that work in a business, you either are really good at keeping secrets or you're a loudmouth.
Yeah.
And so I just don't say anything because it's not my place to say, but it's a good story. But like 3 months later, it was like breaking news. Kenny admits. And I was like, what do you mean Kenny admits? I've known this story for 3 months. So what did you know about this situation?
That's amazing. You know, it kind of came back to me now. I remember... Pink was on the song, and I knew she was putting out a new record, so I remember hearing, you know, it won't be a single because she's going to make a new record, and then...
So you did hear that.
I do now that you say that. It's kind of coming back, but I never heard... Then I just heard, oh, it's the next single. I never... Because, you know, we had Noise first, and Noise was kind of quick to come and go, and then this one happened really fast, so I never heard the reason. I never heard that it was because she got pregnant, so her music was on hold.
Crazy.
That's crazy. I never knew that. I can't believe I never thought.
I'm glad I could bring info to your podcast, Ross. Yeah. It's awesome. I'm sharing stories. So that song there, when you wrote it, did you write it as a duet?
We didn't at all. And you know,
who'd you write it with?
Josh Osborne and Matt Jenkins. And we didn't think of this song. It's not like this is one of those ones we got home that night and we were like, oh my gosh, this is the one, man. This is one of those ones. It was like me and Josh's favorite song, and Josh was playing it out in rounds, and
playing it before anybody.
He just started playing it in rounds, and he'd be like, "Man, Ross, that Setting the World on Fire song goes over really well in rounds." I was like, "Oh, cool, Josh. That's good, man." And so then Kenny cut it, and somehow decided to put Pink on it. Kenny has a great like intuition to know. He just has this... I always say he's the best A&R guy in Nashville. I always feel like he picks...
About songs or about duets?
Songs. And just duet A&R-ing his record, knowing to put Pink on that song. I never would have thought to put her on that song. And I feel like her being on that song... The first time I heard it, I literally cried when I heard it in the studio with them. Just because I grew up with Pink on the radio and like just hearing her voice on a song that I... was a part of writing was just mind-numbing to me.
You know, I was talking to Kenny. It was the same night, and Pink had come through over the top. We were doing this interview whole thing, and Pink came over, and they didn't require. I don't think they had spent a lot of time together.
Yeah,
you know, and that's how it works. A lot of people don't realize that now, because back in the old days, like when, because I assume I was born in the '80s. You born in the '80s?
Me too.
Okay,
what year?
Wait, early. What year are you?
Early.
Okay. Like, not like 89 or anything. I'm not like Taylor Swift.
That's what most people nowadays. Oh, 87.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm like, come on, man. I don't even count that as.
But they. People don't even record in the studio together anymore. Just generally, they don't record together. And it's almost to a listener, it's like, oh, man, I just want to imagine Mariah Carey and Boyz II Men doing One Sweet Day. Remember the video? And they're all in the studio together. And it's like, sorry, I never told you. Dude. And they're back
That's
and forth.
Right.
That's how I imagine every duet.
Yes.
And he was like, no, we really didn't.
Yeah. I will say, when we did Different for Girls with Dierks, Dierks flew us on his little plane to Texas to El King.
There's no way I'm going to let and not that I want to sidetrack that story.
Playing with Dierks.
Let me tell you what happened, Ross. Because Ross and I were both at Dierks' after party at the ACMs. And so we go and we're there. And I think the last time I was on, or maybe even on the air, because there are certain stories you come out of there with, and they're safe to tell. And I told about Luke. And Luke goes up into the DJ booth and he's like, where's the microphone?
Oh, that was so funny.
And DJ's like, there's no microphone. He's like, what?
He was talking into the headphones.
Yeah, so
right?
Luke plugs in a pair of headphones into the microphone jack and starts yelling through the headphones.
I didn't think that worked. Does that actually work?
It does. All I know is I hear Luke screaming over the top of the speakers with distortion. And he's like, all right, people, we're going to dance. And so everybody starts dancing and I'm talking to Dierks. And Dierks is like, hey, I'm flying home tomorrow at 3 p.m. And my flight was at like 7 in the morning, right? And he's like, you can fly back with me if you want. And I'm like, cool. Dierks has got a jet, and I'm going to hop on Dierks' jet. And he's like, no, I flew my plane. I was like, all right, I'm going to go fly Southwest. There's no way I'm flying. Listen.
That's hilarious.
Dierks is one of my favorite people in the whole world.
Yeah, me too.
But I'm not getting in a small plane.
He wears the drunk on a plane hat and the glasses, too, when he's in the cockpit.
Small plane, is that weird?
It's weird, bro, because you feel it all. And Dierks, at one point, got off the plane and was like, that was one of the roughest rides I've ever had in my life. And he's got the drunk on a plane glasses, and he's like over the loudspeaker, like, yeah, welcome to Dude Air.
See, I don't need my pilot making jokes. I don't even like on Southwest. We were flying into Kansas once, and the pilot, it's storming, right? And the pilot comes on and he goes, we're going to do a little trivia here as we go through this. And I'm like, dude, just focus on the freaking.
Yeah,
just
seriously, dude.
I don't need Dierks drunk on a plane.
No. But he's actually a great pilot.
I'm sure he is. I like pilots whose main job is to be a pilot.
That's right.
Not to be a superstar.
That's right.
Dierks is like third job is
pilot.
He
has a few drinks on stage too, right? He's got to have a few drinks on stage. And then he flies home.
Listen, I doubt. Regardless, Dierks is an artist and a dad and a. Then he's a pilot in order. I need my pilots to be up ranked around one first. Maybe two.
Hilarious, man.
So speaking of Dierks, let's see. For Dierks, man, you have so many songs here. You wrote Tip It On Back.
Yeah.
Was this the first Dierks song you wrote?
That song started everything for me.
Really?
Everything? I really think it is. That's just, I really do owe my career to Dierks. And I always tell him that because he took a chance on that song. And it was my first big single I'd ever had. It got to 5. And then he liked the demo, so then we started hanging out. And that's when he asked me to produce his record, Riser. And that really did start it all for me.
So you credit Dierks as...
I really do, and I always tell him. Yeah.
Really?
I really do.
And this was your first single?
I think Thompson Square Glass before that.
But this was your first top 10 single.
This is my first top 10, yeah. John Knight.
I have Glass here.
Wow, Bob.
Oh, I have it all, Ross.
Oh, my gosh.
I know that I'm like Wikipedia Ross Kaufman.
Oh, my gosh. I'm scared.
So Thompson Square has a song. Okay, let's just rewind
a bit. How far back
more.
Did you go, though, Bobby?
I have a lot. I have you as a UK pop artist.
No, you don't.
I do.
No, you don't.
Okay, don't look at my screen. I have all of it. And we'll get there.
Oh, my God.
So you moved to town.
Oh, man.
Let's just talk about Nashville first. You moved to Nashville to be a songwriter. What year?
Oh, man. I always say it's about 10 years ago. What would that be? 2006, 2007-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you move here. And, I mean, are you stable when you move here financially? Do you have friends?
Like, so I had... I had a record deal in the UK, and so I had a publishing deal with EMI there, and I was locked into this EMI UK publishing deal that never ended. And I was done with being an artist, and so I was stuck in this deal, and I met a guy named Josh Van Valkenburg at the Big Loud Shirt parking lot party, and I was like, hey, I write for EMI. You think you could listen to some of my songs? And he was like, sure, dude, whatever. And so I played him some songs, and he kind of took me under his wing. And
you played him songs with your instrument and voice, or you played him songs like you gave him a CD?
My guitar. And, okay. And then he really developed me. He is the reason also. There's so many people. This town, man, it doesn't just happen, you know, fast. It was definitely 10 years for me. And yeah, Josh took me under his wing, and then Bradley Collins from BMI sent me to the Key West Songwriters Festival, and I came back with so many new friends. I went down there not knowing anyone. Kit Moore was one of my first friends. Me and him were goofing around down there, riding scooters backwards and being crazy. And I made some of my best friends down there.
So you start riding in town with a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you wrote 100 songs or so before Glass gets...
Oh, yeah.
So whenever you first get that, hey, this is going to be the single for an artist that's on the radio.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big deal, right?
Huge. Me and John Knight, first time we met, we wrote Glass together. Just us in a room with a guitar, green carpeted floor, the old EMI building. We just stared into each other's eyes longingly. And
sounds like it.
We really did. And we literally have been best friends since that day.
And this song, top 15?
Yeah, top 15. I love those guys, man. Thompson Square.
Yeah. I do, too.
They're some of my favorite people.
Kiefer's funny, too.
Kiefer's so great,
oddly,
man.
Funny. Yeah. Oddly funny. Like, you don't expect it from him. He's oddly funny. Yeah.
Who else is oddly funny?
We did
just mess with
a TV show together. It ended up not getting picked up. We went through the whole process. Of I have a TV production company, so we shot.
What don't you have, man?
I try everything. Bobby. Nothing really works.
Come on.
The thing. I try a little bit. I did try to get in low everything.
My dad's pretty geeked out that I'm doing this interview with you today. He's a huge fan of yours.
Is he?
Yeah. He's in Roanoke, Virginia, so he listens to all this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Here. That's awesome. Wow.
Yeah, huge fan.
And you grew up in Virginia.
I'm from Virginia, yeah.
So Thompson Square cuts Glass. They call you and say, hey, and then it goes about, where'd it go, 12?
12, 13 area, yeah.
So at 12.
That was a huge deal at that
time.
Do
you make good money at 12 or 13 back then?
I feel like back then you actually made more, yeah.
Because songs don't just go, tum, tum, tum. This is my theory on
music.
Right,
now it just flies, doesn't it?
It flies, and I know you have a million number ones.
It flies,
so don't take offense to this in any way. Here's my problem with the format right now.
Do it, yeah.
Is that there are so many number ones that the music's not going to last because we don't get to sit with it.
I agree. Number ones are forgotten.
That's
why these people that buy song catalogs, I'm always like, why are you doing it? Because, you know, there's like four quarters of a song paying money, and then it really, the drop off is like Mount Everest.
We don't give these songs enough time to breathe,
and
especially with the superstars.
I agree, dude.
And it's not the superstar's fault. They're a superstar.
It is the superstars who go the fastest.
Like,
you're right.
If even now Dirk's is up on that A list, but if it's Dirk or Blake or Luke, or
so fast.
Any of these guys, and it's the record label's fault, it's radio's fault, it's everyone's
fault.
Luke's
new single's about it.
Because
fast.
It's just like, get it, shoot up, gone. But then they can't even play all their number ones at a concert.
Luke especially.
Because they go by so. And Luke's 40, he's not like he's 65.
I know.
And you forget sometimes with these songs, because we were talking about Strip It Down, which you wrote.
Yeah.
And Strip It Down was on this last album.
It was fast. It went fast.
He had six number ones on Luke's last album. And it's crazy, but you know why you
can
do that?
That's becoming like the norm, though.
Because you can songs shoot up so fast.
Yeah, yeah.
And so,
and then albums suffer because everyone's just writing the singles. You only get six singles on a record. That's crazy.
So, okay. Talk about this one for a second. You wrote this one.
Yeah. We went out to Luke's farm. First time we'd ever been out there. His place blew our mind. We thought we were on another planet. He's got the river is stocked with trout somehow. I don't even understand how that works. How the trout are in one place. Like
he says, you know, he goes and he stocks it hard with tiny ones and he grows them big.
Yeah. But I still don't understand how they stay on his property. I'm like, why don't they end up down somewhere?
I think my theory is he has someone that comes right before you come.
Catches
him
with a net.
And they throw him right into the area where you're going to be, and a whole lot of them, so he can show off. Because he has Luke money, he can do that.
Yeah, he did have a field with deer. He's like, oh, all the deer are bedding down over there. It felt like, and a tree stand right there is like, cheating. Honey.
It was like Disney. It's like Disney. Luke World. Yeah, he has everything in the right place at the right time. It's like a safari where you know where the elephants are going to be. He's got it all set up.
Sorry.
So you go and
we rode around his farm. We rode around through the river. He was showing us everything. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. We came back, ate some deer jerky. He grabbed an acoustic and he's like, he started playing these chords and he literally started singing the chorus. And me and John were like, whoa, 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 what is that? I opened my laptop, started recording him. It's like writing down as fast as I could. 20 minutes. He just kind of spouted out lines. Me and John were just catching it. And he's like, all right, boys, you want to wrap it up? Finish this another time or something? So we're like, no, let's keep fighting. And so
no.
we knew. And then so we went home and basically the whole song was like in this scattered of three pages of just notes. And we kind of just pieced it together and with Luke's help. And then he cut it and it was crazy.
At this level where you are now, because as we'll see, it wasn't always easy and it wasn't always awesome. But now you have success and you have money and you have people that are dying to write with you and work with you as you produce. And like you're growing just as an entity. Like you're doing all these things. But for you, like how hard is it for you? Like for someone, let's say it's a writer comes to town, right?
Yeah.
And at first, they could probably get a write with you pretty easy. Like whenever you're not making any money.
Yeah.
But now, do you just go sit and write for artists specifically? Or do you just still write songs and see where they land mostly?
Man, you know, we do. And I feel like the best songs get written like that when it's me and John and Shane or me and Josh Osborne and Rodney Clausen. Or like, I feel like that's how you write the best songs, when you're not thinking about anything and you're just trying to write the best song in the room that day.
But are artists, they're calling you though and going, hey, Ross, come sit with me.
Yeah.
Because you're writing all these hits.
Well, a lot of artists are such good writers. Luke would be one of the, he'd be BMI Songwriter of the Year every year. Luke Bryan would. Dirks is a great songwriter. Keith's a great. They're all so good. And so, yeah, when we go write with them, they always have like a year of ideas stocked up because they've been on the road touring. So, and they're not writing every day. So we're like flexing the muscle every day so we can help to shape them. But
how hard is it to think of different stuff every day, though? Like, what have you done today? Did you write today?
Yeah, with Craig Wiseman.
Okay, so you go and write with Craig Wiseman, who
has you know, I'll that. Tell you today. That's a great. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. No. Craig Wiseman has been around and has written so many. And probably has a million stories. Like, it's probably awesome to go sit with someone like that because they have so much that you can hear and be inspired by.
So much. And, you know, we didn't have a title today. And we were kind of just, we were grinding. He was telling stories. I was just learning from him. And I saw, like, he had a keychain on the table. Big Loud Shirt. You know, that's the name of his publishing company. I was like, Craig, have you ever written Big Loud Shirt? He's like, wow, no. I've never written that. And so we started Big Loud Shirt. But that's how things happen. Like, you just see something. Or like when we wrote For a Thousand Horses Smoke, he had a Blackberry Smoke hat on. Michael Hobby did.
Yeah. So he had a Blackberry, he had the band's hat
on. I was just staring. We didn't have an idea. I was just staring at his hat. Smoke. I was like, smoke? What's that smoke? Not that it's the most... I really feel like nowadays, simpler the better. Like, simple title that you can tell in a different way. That's just what I'm into right now.
So you wrote this song with Michael and who else?
And John Knight.
You know, it's weird. It makes sense because I do the same thing. We get into our little friend, the people we trust. And we like to work with people we trust.
Yes.
And, like, who are your people?
John would be first. Josh Osborne, Shane McAnally, Rodney Clausen, Nicole.
And do you call Clausen?
Nicole Clausen.
Oh, Nicole Clausen. Do you call them? How far in advance do you guys set up these writes?
You know, we book our years out all the way to December.
You book a year out?
We do. And then, but we leave it kind of loose so that we can fill in. Like me and Ashley Gourley, he'll be one of those that I trust. He's probably got to be one of the best ever to exist, songwriter-wise. He's like Rain Man. I've never seen anyone write like him. But we'll do like 2 days with Ashley every month through December, and then we'll fill it in as we go. So Billy Kearney's coming to town. Hey, you got anything? I'm like, oh, jump in with me and Ashley this day or something.
So you guys will have a right set, and then you'll leave a spot and someone will hop in.
It's constantly juggle. We're up at night, 11 o'clock at night, every night texting, oh, what if we do this here, throw this person here, or like constant juggle to try and maximize every right. You have to nowadays because it's so hard to get outside cuts. Like you said, like when just three writers get in a room to try to write the best song, even the best song these days the best songs are not always winning now.
What wins? Artists who write their own songs, they can also get paid for it?
I do think those songs win now, man. Unfortunately.
It makes sense that they do. And not saying that it's right or wrong.
But yeah, it does.
Let me just
Bobby.
Put the shoe on my foot.
Yeah.
Let's say I write a song. And it's almost as good as a song that's announced. It doesn't have to be as good, but it's so close. And so I'm a superstar. And I know my superstarness will push that over the limit.
Exactly.
I'm cutting my song because I need to get paid.
So the question is, does it matter? There's the big question. That's a big question, dude. Is that okay? Does that affect music as a whole? Does that matter?
The answer is yes, but it's a superstar culture. The same way these songs are getting shot
culture.
To number one.
Just like you said, somebody's going to remember it anyways.
These songs that are, you know, because Shane McAnally came in, we're talking about the same thing. And it's like, back when we were kids in the 90s, like Boots, Scoot, and Boogie was number one for a while. And it had room to breathe.
Yeah.
And it took a long time to get there. And it just became like anthems of entire eras, like summers or winters. Or we just remember, you know, the dance as being, you know, junior high.
I know.
It was like 6 week number one. That would never happen.
So do we have that
now?
Is there a song that you could off the top of your head right now that would be like, oh, that was last summer. That was last summer.
Let's think.
I know you always say this is the song of the summer because I know you say that a lot.
I picked, you know, I just talk to hear myself talk sometimes. But let me think about that.
What's the song?
Let's just pick in the last few years.
House That Built Me is the first one that comes to me.
Okay, for you, that would be a song that you're like, boom. And that's going to be one that lasts.
Yeah.
Okay, let me think. Yeah. No one's ever asked me this. This is a really great question.
Yeah.
Songs that are out in the past, let's say 3-4 years.
Yeah.
That I think are going to last.
It's a great question.
I think, oh, man.
Yeah.
Because
it's tricky.
Like, I think something like, okay.
I just came to me too. I wonder if.
What were you going to say?
Girl Crush.
Girl Crush is a...
Might be. Maybe.
Yeah.
What? Tell me what you're...
I was going to say something like... Because it's going to take something meaningful now. I would say like Drink a Beer for Luke.
Ooh, wow. Interesting.
Because I think that's one that will last with people because of the message.
Could be, yeah.
And then occasionally you'll get an artist that will just create something. That, like the Stapleton. The entire Traveler record.
Will last. His new record sounds even better.
You know what's funny? I have it.
Out the
and,
clips.
And I won't. I have the whole record, right?
Okay.
And I won't listen to it.
Why?
Because I don't listen to music early. And I love Chris. And Chris was like, "I want you to have this record."
So good, Bobby.
I can't.
It's like my favorite record, man.
The new one.
I have the clips on iTunes. I'm listening to like a minute 20 of each song or whatever you get. I'm
even
just like
you don't
wearing
have the
it
record.
Out.
The guy with.
I need to go get it. I need to. I haven't asked anybody, but.
And I didn't. I just
because I'm gonna buy it. I want to buy that record. It's like that's the one that might be like one of the few records I buy this year.
I want to experience it like my people experience it.
Yeah,
because I need to be
absolutely.
I can't not be the people that listen to me.
Yeah,
and so
absolutely.
I want to get it the day of and be excited about it too. And so that's why I won't listen to it. And Chris was so nice to say I would love for you to have this record, and I said back. I appreciate it, but I can't listen. The one album that I did listen to early because I had to was the new John Mayer record, and it's not out yet, and I have it.
You don't give me that.
And I'm a
you don't have it.
I'm
hold on. You
I,
mean Beyond
I have,
EPs
I, yeah,
that
yeah,
he's
yeah.
been putting out?
I have Beyond everything. I have
oh,
the whole
gosh,
thing. I'm going to see him in Minneapolis this weekend.
Oh, Bobby.
I'm a huge John Mayer fan. I think I've seen him in concert 13 times, and I have the whole record, yeah. But there's just four
Is
more
it
songs.
So good?
It's so good.
Oh, it's just four more, and then that completes
It's all
the,
three waves. And that completes
all
the record.
Waves. Sorry, I keep getting this.
Which moment. I'll tell you this too.
That's amazing.
Just talking about music is that I think the culture of putting out a record at 12 songs is going to die soon.
I wish it had died 3 years ago.
Because
I tell every artist like, why?
It's too much.
People can't process a whole album.
It's like
except the Stapleton record. For some reason, was 9 songs.
It's 9 songs. There's a huge cover on it.
Yeah.
You know, because Tennessee Whiskey's a cover.
Yeah.
which, by the way, you know, David Allan Coe wrote it, and George Jones covered it.
I know.
And people don't know this.
Crazy.
But it, and it doesn't matter as a thing.
It doesn't matter.
But, yeah, it's also so
most
good.
Most people thought it was a new song, though.
Yeah.
Most
people did. It's also so good.
Timberlake singing on it, you're like, oh, it's gotta be new. Yeah.
I think, though, that it's almost like having a Thanksgiving meal, a Thanksgiving dinner every meal when you get a new record. It's 12 songs.
Yes.
It's like, what do I eat? I'm going to get full. I don't have enough time to listen to an hour and 15
minutes.
You don't,
do you? You really don't anymore.
And so I have to decide which songs I like the most really
so
quickly.
True.
And we have our, you know, our iHeart or our Spotify, whatever. Yeah. We're erasing songs if they don't fit.
I know.
And so we don't have time to enjoy it.
You really don't. You
because we
songs.
Can't spend time with it. When John Mayer put them out four at a time, I got to spend time with
me
all
too.
Four of those songs.
And I fell in love with all four
all
every time.
And I don't think I would have if he'd have put out 12 at a time.
Wow, that's such a good point, dude.
So I think the culture of the album is going to change.
I agree.
Because we're ADD. Like, as a society.
We're so ADD. We didn't used to be.
No, we didn't have the option, though. The digital option wasn't there.
I wish
there.
I knew how to fix it, because I literally, we're so ADD now. I'm so guilty.
What's going to happen is, though, in 10 years, we're going to go, remember back in the good old days when we were deleting? It's just, everything progresses. Just like music. Just like everybody complaining about music. You know, we live now where everyone's like, well, that's not country. That's not country. What happened? You know what happened 10 years ago? Everybody was saying, that's not country. That's not country. You know what happened 30 years ago? Everyone was saying, that's not country. It's just never going to end.
Wow.
And that's okay.
Yeah. How far does it go? That's a great question, though.
It goes as far as... It will just keep going. It will never stop.
Yeah.
Mike, we have a sponsor. 100... Oh, let me talk about 100 Flowers for a second. So after a cold and wet winter, it's officially tulip season at 1-800-Flowers.com. And when it comes to surprising your friends and loved ones with the best blooms and the best colors, 1-800-Flowers. I've used 1-800-Flowers probably a dozen times in my life. These gorgeous and awesome flowers have arrived just in time. It's almost Easter. Want to set them up? Great price. Right now, 1-800-Flowers is giving away to the people who are listening to this right now, 30 for 30 offer. 30 assorted tulips for $30. That's basically, I guess it is. It's a dollar a tulip. Bright and beautiful mix of orange, yellow, pink blooms. You pick your delivery date. You let 1-800-Flowers handle the rest. 1-800-Flowers, it expires rather quickly in the next few days. So 1-800-Flowers.com/bones to get the 30 stunning assorted tulips for $30. 1-800-Flowers.com/bones. Great for Easter. Send it to your mother-in-law, your mom, your girlfriend. 1-800-Flowers.com/bones. All right, so I want to play some more of these songs here. Let's see. How about, I'm going to tell you, so this, man, when I go to Keith Urban songs, because I have a wall, and I mention the wall to people. Like, these are, like, artists that I have direct, like, friendships, and I have a wall in my house, and there are six things on it. And it's Keith and Pasley and Jansen and Marin and Kelsey and Little Big Town, Girl Crush. Because I've either had something to do with them, or they've had something to do with me.
Yeah.
And I love, and Keith is a friend.
Yeah, that's awesome, man.
Break on Me is one of my favorite Keith songs ever.
That's awesome to hear you say that, Bobby.
This song is so good.
Break on Me.
Oh, dude.
Tell me about writing this one.
Man, I think me and John were supposed to write with Dirks that day. I think Dirks, he had to go somewhere. He bailed. And John, you know, when you get bailed on these days, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, let's just take the day and hang out with our kids and stuff. And so I begged John to come over. I was like, John, just come over and let's write. Come on, let's write. So he's like, all right. He came over. I handed him this, like, 1965 Stella guitar I got at a pawn shop. And he started playing those chords, man. And I threw a little beat down. And we just started just staring lovingly into each other's eyes like we did on Glass. And, we wrote it in like an hour.
It's such a vulnerable song.
It's so vulnerable. And we, you know, I don't hear it. We kind of wrote it for our wives and our little girls. This is probably my favorite song, man.
Really? Yeah, I love it. When your heart needs to break, when it comes back to you, and it's been different with everyone we've talked to, from when like Natalie Hemby's in or when Shane's in, when a song comes back to you from the artist and they've cut it,
yeah.
First of all, when do you get it?
With Keith, I think he snuck this one to me early. And I always know when Keith does a song, your mind is going to be blown because he's one of the best producers I've ever met. Literally, he's one of the best producers. And so he just knows how to take these tracks to like other worldly places. And I should play the demo that this sometime. This and John Cougar, I should play the demos of. So vastly different from how he interpreted the songs. That's what makes a great artist, is taking a song that you... I think it's more impressive to me when an artist can take a song that they did not write and make it a Keith Urban masterpiece.
Yeah,
that to me is the most impressive thing.
You say that about John Cougar. And so when I think of the song, I think of the bass line. I think of Keith grabbing the bass guitar.
Who would have thought of that?
And
I know
Keith just ripping the bass out and just going and just adding.
I know.
And he even plays it in shows with
he
with
does. The bass I didn't even guitar. Know he played bass.
I think he could probably play the flute as a guitar if he wanted
he
to.
Absolutely like could.
He's on a different
absolutely
level.
Could. Yes. Skin flute.
So
definitely.
Obviously. What's the deal? So tell me about this song. Like, what's the demo? What's the difference in this song?
This was just a really straightforward. It was not the bass riff. It was not as bouncy. It was more just like guitar with a little beat under it, kind of walking down. The song is the same, but him doing that, and then modulating up and then back down, because he heard it on a Kendrick Lamar record. Did you know that? Did he tell you that? He heard Kendrick go up, modulate up, and then come back down, which doesn't sound like it should work at all, because once you raise the energy, it shouldn't be able to work to come back down. And he did it somehow, and it blows my mind still.
That was... I can say this. There are a few artists where I'll listen to a song early. That was one of the few that he texted me early. He was like, like 3 weeks before. He's like, you got to hear this song. And I was like, dang, dude. Because it was just boom, 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 boom. I was like, dude, I remember playing back like, wow, that's funky.
It's funky. Your first listen.
Yeah.
You're right. My first listen to that one was in the studio with him and Dan, and the mix was all kind of different. It was like, it was a lot to take in. I was like, whoa, what just happened? I don't even know what happened to me.
How did you and Keith get to be a thing?
Man, when I first came to Nashville, within the first year or two, Keith and Joe Fisher had a publishing company, and they offered me my first publishing deal to get me out of my UK deal. And I think Keith just started hearing my songs early and started kind of, he'd put them on hold, and then he wanted to write, because Keith's always trying to write with the new guys, what's happening. And so he came over and we wrote with David Lee Murphy. We wrote Even the Stars Fall for You, which was on Fuse. And then we produced a song or two together for that record. And then we just became good friends. And now we have this publishing company together called Boom. I love being in business with him. He's one of my favorite humans.
Yeah. And
Big Little Lies is one of my favorite shows.
Ever. And I only watched one episode. I've only seen one episode. I started last night. And I watched it.
Oh, Bobby, it's so good.
And this is the weird thing about Keith, and I say it a lot, is I just didn't think he was real.
Oh, he's, I know.
I mean, I was just like, okay, you're such a big star.
How could
Why
he be that
you
down
this
to earth?
Kind?
Why, I still don't understand. I know.
And in the land of make-believe where we live, and everyone's only kind so they can live another day and make another dollar. Like, why are you this kind when you don't have to be?
I know.
That's what I always thought about him.
I know.
And every, and I've been here 4 or 5 years now, and it's only gotten better.
I agree.
He doesn't need anything from me.
He doesn't.
Keith
from anybody.
Zero from me.
He drives a Bugatti.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. He does. It's like a Batmobile. And he doesn't need anything from me, and he's always the case.
He's one of the best humans, man.
And then I'll see him go on Fallon or go do something at the International Grammys. Then he'll text me and be like, hey, dude, you good? And I'm like, wait, what?
Aren't you in the audience at the Academy Awards?
Yeah, shouldn't you be doing... And Nicole is so nice.
Oh, my gosh. She's the best.
I haven't seen all Big Little Lies yet, but I hear she's pretty nuts. Don't ruin it. I hear she does a fantastic...
It's our favorite show we've ever seen, man.
I've heard that from so many
people. It is. It's just too good. The acting is just beyond this.
Because these things live a long time, these podcasts, someone's going to hear this in like 6 months from now, or I'll hear it back and be like, man, if I only knew then. Because it's only one season, right?
And
that's
over.
It.
Yes.
Because it was a book.
But it's a book, so I think it might be tied somehow.
I don't want to talk about it because I don't want you to run anything, Ross.
No, I'm not.
I don't want you to run. I want to roll down a couple of the songs here because I got so much to talk about.
Okay.
How about we can get Donut, Billy Currington.
Love Billy, man. Billy's another one of my favorite people in the world.
Billy.
Do you know Billy that well?
I do a little bit. Now,
you need to spend some time with him. He's a fascinating dude.
That's the thing. Billy intrigues me.
He intrigues me too.
And I don't feel like we would, because I'm such an introvert who doesn't do things like rock climb or get on the ocean or go to Hawaii. That's just not me and my personality. So I don't think that Billy and I would hang out as humans, but he comes in and we enjoy each other because we're so different.
Mm-hmm.
Last time he was in, like, the show ended or whatever, and we were talking, and he was like, hey, listen, I'm going for like, hey, this is him talking to me. He goes, I'm going to my place in Hawaii for like a month. And he was like, hey, this is where I live. Here's the address. Here's my number. I'm going to be out there for a month. Call me. Come out. He's like, come out there for a few days. And I'm like, Billy, I'm not, like, I appreciate that.
You should do it. You should do it sometime.
I would never do that, Ross. That's just not, I'm not cool.
You're so cool.
I'm never going to be cool. I'm never going to go rock climb with Billy and Kip. Kip and I went to like breakfast somewhere at one of these cool guy places, right? And so,
what, in Nashville?
Yeah, like in East Nashville, right? Not in Hawaii, trust me.
What's the restaurant? I want to know.
I don't know.
Okay.
But Kip was like, meet me here. And so I was like, cool. And so Kip and I go and we're eating. And Kip and I had kind of gotten into a little fight because I was making fun of him for people yelling at people using phones at a show. And so, we were just like, hey, let's just go talk it out and have and eat and figure it out. We're both humans. We're both sensitive humans that we probably need to talk it out so we can just get back and be cool again. So he's like, meet me here. I met him here. It's great. Now we're great, by the way, now.
Okay, good.
And so
also one of my favorite people.
If he wasn't, I wouldn't have brought it up. But listen, I fought with some of my best friends now. Like, because I have a big mouth. I just tend to say whatever comes out of my head.
And you record it all the time.
It's just live. And there's no pulling it back. That's
the difference. If you weren't just on the air, you're just doing a normal.
If I recorded every radio show, nothing would get out.
But that's what makes your show so great, is because you're just real.
Yeah, it gets me
in
trouble.
And so it's real life, but you're just on it. Yeah.
Well, Kip's like, hey, yeah, but and Kip's like, let's go rock climbing. I'm like, dude, I'm not going rock climbing. Like, I'm not you guys. Like, I'm not cool. And then I see pictures of him and Billy, like, ripped up climbing rocks.
Bandanas on.
Like, so cool. I'm like, that'll never be me. But I do like Billy a lot.
Yeah, me too.
From the limited time that I've spent with him, he seems like a pretty nice guy.
Sharp guy, man. He's got his own coconut oil company, his own coconut water company. Do you know that?
Hmm.
Like, it's legit. Like, we have his coconut oil in our house.
So he's making money that we don't even know he's making.
He is. He's a little bit of a mogul on the side. Like, nobody really knows.
Well, as are you. Like, people may, you know, if you Google Ross Copperman, whatever, and you net worth $100 million, you don't know that he's
Is that on there?
Yeah. You don't know that, you know, you're also producing records.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm, yeah, true.
They don't know that you have a publishing company. You know? There are things that you're also doing.
Yeah.
So don't play on this whole somebody else is a mogul. He's trying to get us, Mike. He's trying to get us with Billy's a mogul, one of those types. He comes in before we even start. Ross is like, man, you're doing comedy, you're doing music. And Ross has got like 9 projects over here, acting like he's just writing songs.
Yeah, yeah. Come on.
I just wrote a song today.
It's
a good day. How about this one right here? It's the Jake song. This is my number one, right?
Yeah, yeah. Same team of writers that wrote Billy's song. No.
So whenever you write something, like, let's say a number one here, like, we have all these that we played. Is there a difference? Say 3 people write it.
You ask such good questions, by the way. I mean,
I love songwriting.
You're so good. You're so good at this.
Okay, stop, Ross.
No, I'm just saying. This is about you. You are. You're really good at this.
I want the people that listen to this to actually learn and appreciate the art of songwriting and how it works and how. But if 3 people write a song,
okay.
And let's say it's you and Jim and John, just as names.
Yeah.
And you write American Country Love song, and it takes 13 weeks to get number one.
Mm-hmm.
And you and Jim and John write Smoke, and it takes 20 weeks to get number one. Is there a difference in pay?
Yeah, Smoke makes way more.
So you want a song, songwriter, to go slow but still get number one.
Yes, everybody. It's a tricky balance because if they go too slow, they might die out in the teens or something. But... So, like, this Darius Rucker song right now, if I told you...
Which, by the way, has been out forever, and it's just now starting to...
Ever. I know.
I remember when... Darius and I were on a bus last summer in Indy.
Yeah.
And we're about to world premiere it, and we were listening. Darius,
that's
my,
last summer?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Darius and I, Darius was my first ever interview when I was 17 years old as Hootie.
Come on.
And so Darius is like the guy I've been closest to my whole career.
When you were 17?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I started in radio. And so
that must have been crazy because Hootie was so big.
It was so
then.
Big, and I was so nervous.
I would have been, yeah, I was a huge Hootie back then. I mean, we all were, right? Everybody loved Hootie.
Yeah, all white people loved Hootie. If you were, I mean, that was like the sub. If you're like, yeah, I love Hootie.
It's so funny.
So we all listened to Hootie, and I was huge, and I knew all the Cracked Review, and so, like every word of every track.
Oh, yeah.
And I was so nervous to interview Darius, he grabbed the microphone and helped me like interview him when I was 17 years old. And so ever since then, like, we've worked in the, we were at Pop together. We came across. We do country together. We've presented at the ACMs together.
That's so cool.
I mean, we're, and so I remember being on a bus with him, and Dan and Shay were his, who I'm friends with too, they were his middle act.
Yeah.
And so I was, Darius and I were sitting on his bus, which is all South Carolina Gamecocked out. He's got like brick wall inside his bus. And by the way, he's talking about something about money. He's got other projects and Pizza Hut's going. And Darius has got, Darius
first
is doing,
world problems over,
doing
yeah,
good.
He's got, yeah.
So he's like, you know, I got this if I told you. And I was like, dude, this song is really good. And then I just don't hear about it for like 2 months.
I know.
And
either.
I look now and here it comes, just shooting up the charts.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
So are you going to make a ton of money off this song?
So this probably will make a lot more than, say, like Drunk, the Drunk in Your Love or something like that. Like, it will, because it's just...
What are we talking? How many songs does it
take? Are those seagulls in there? Did you put those in there?
I didn't add seagulls.
Are there seagulls in there? I've never heard of it. I produced that.
I guess you didn't know.
Did
there was
I put
a seagull
seagulls
in the room.
In the back part?
Do we have a re- is there a re- hold on.
I hear the seagulls.
Dude, what's the,
those are seagulls, dude.
What's up with the birds?
Those are seagulls.
What's that? Mike, is that from like the beach? Somebody playing it at a beach? Or is that?
That is so
you didn't put
funny.
Seagulls in that?
No, I don't think so. Those are definitely seagulls.
Did you add the seagulls? I swear to you, I didn't add the mongoose and strip it down. That's great. Okay, how many number ones does it take to make $1 million?
Oh my gosh, Bobby. Oh my gosh.
Four, three. Three number ones to make $1 million.
Oh,
as three, right? As a writer of...
As a writer of three. I'd say six, man.
I'm going to disagree with that.
You do?
Yeah, because all my millions have been made... Like, I would know. Why would I disagree with that? I have no idea what...
I think it's... And it decreases, man. But I do feel like...
And it varies because how fast
varies,
the song goes.
I'd say five or six.
Because on Nashville... Whenever Gunner gets his check. How many times people compare your life to Nashville?
Oh my gosh, like so much. My own parents. That's hilarious.
Gunner opens his first check and it's like, I got a ride check and it's $400,000. I'm like, well, that's not really how it works.
Did you know that I was kind of in the beginning of the Nashville show with Callie, T-Bone. The initial meetings for that show were at my house in Bellevue.
Is that where like consulting on how to put the show together?
Talking about how we're going to get these vocals. And I kind of... showed Connie Britton how to sing on headphones. She had never sung on a microphone or headphones, so she like came over to my house and like practiced. Yeah, I did the first season of that. A lot of the songs in the first season of that.
Did you make money off of that? Or is that kind of...
Yeah, that was good, like production money.
It seems so... Okay, production money, really like single, like song money?
Songs is like, yeah.
Because I would think they're not being featured really except on an episode.
They're not. There was no money for songwriters on that show, which always bothered
me
for Nashville. Yeah.
Because there probably were a ton of good songs.
There were.
Or did they just go and pick a bunch of middle of the road, mediocre songs?
What happened is everyone in Nashville found out that there was no money in the songs, so nobody was giving them their A-list songs. That is what happened.
Because it would have to be one of the two.
That affects the show, doesn't it? That affects the show.
Either a bunch of the songs get wasted, or you just don't give them good songs.
Nobody gave them good songs. No one's sending them Break On Me. Nobody's sending them Merry Go Round. Which,
and if they do, you know what I mean? They go away and we'll never hear because there's three an episode and it's 20 seconds at a time.
But I think they could have capitalized more on a great song being featured
over and over,
running it up on iTunes. Yes. Oh, that's.
Or if they had a song, and again, this is us talking here. Or if they had a song that it stayed with the character the whole time.
Yes.
And they continued through like a 6-episode arc of them using that song.
Yes. A great song.
They could have made that. Because I know even with Hayden at the beginning, they tried that with the song.
They did try that. I think I did that song, maybe.
How do you think you did? How do you not know? Because there was you just have so many. He just has so many. Mike, no, he doesn't even know. Many.
He's Hypnotized. Like, you know, there was a song that Hayden that recurred for her a lot.
And it actually got played on the radio a bit. I mean, I want to look it up.
Oh, here. I didn't do that one. Yeah, the one that was a single. I remember that one.
But
I might have done the one for the show of that song.
They could have done that with a couple of songs.
They should have. Yeah.
You know, they have her here as.
Yeah, that's.
I don't think this is it, but whatever. Let's see. What else do we have here? Let's see. Oh, let me talk about Blue Apron for a second.
Blue Apron, life changing.
Always loved the Blue Apron. Helps keep this Bobbycast going because I really enjoy Blue Apron. I think a lot of people do because the food just tastes better because the ingredients are better. They are fresh ingredients and they come in a box and you actually make the food. But first of all, you pick your delivery and it comes to your door. For example, I think mine is on a Tuesday and I get the box full of whatever it is that I've chosen. You can pick your recipes based on your preferences. They have delivery options that fit your needs. There's no weekly commitment either. I mean, you just get basically what you want when you want it. And there's all of these new recipes. I would just suggest going to blueapron.com/Bobby and just looking. That's it. Just look. blueapron.com/Bobby. They have a culinary team. Recipes are not repeated within a year. You'll never get bored. blueapron.com/Bobby. And if you go right now, check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals for free with free shipping. blueapron.com/Bobby. Blue Apron is a better way to cook. Blue Apron is a way that I cook and I'm able to eat. And I think you'll love it too. It tastes really good. blueapron.com/Bobby. All right, so now, let's see. Man, I want to run through some of these. Let's see. John Cougar, that one, Break On Me. Donut, Smoke, Luke, Strip It Down. American Country Love Song. Florida Georgia Line, Confession. Those low cash guys are.
They're the best dudes.
They're the best dudes.
They are.
Like when you talk about good humans.
Good humans, man.
I mean.
Hard workers.
They were grinding it forever.
I know.
Like, you want to talk about a story of how much Seriously. Do you want it?
Oh, gosh.
There's one of these where Preston came in here and sat, and we talked forever, and he cried, and he told a story about. I mean, they just stayed in it and swung.
They really did.
And swung. And this was their first number
first
one.
First number one. Crazy.
Yeah, because I love the slot we got to number two.
I know. Which I think of that as a number one song because you hear it all the time.
And you know what? That song will. Yeah. No offense. I think that song probably lasts longer than this one does.
I think so too.
Even though this was the number one, and I know you wrote it, and I got to say this to your face. But
no,
I think
you're
because
right.
Because that started them off as it like did. A real life, and it's such a big positive message.
I agree. I love this life, man. Who doesn't want to hear that every day? You know what I mean?
I mean, and that's why. That's why I started playing it. Like, I was the first one to play
the
song.
Makes you feel good about yourself.
Because I was like, our show is about positivity. Let me play the song. And, you know, that's kind of where it took off. But. Yeah, not to take. Listen, you made plenty of money off the song. I really like it too. I love the song. I love these guys. But for them, I remember talking, and they were like, "You know what? We don't have a lot of outside cuts."
Yes.
But they felt like this song was so right up their wheelhouse
because they're great writers too.
So they took an outside song.
I know, which is always so great. Chesney's the king of that. I've sat with Chesney as he's told other artists, "You make more in one night of merch than you do writing your whole record." Don't worry about writing your record.
That's crazy. The merch thing. Like, you just dropped a bomb on me that I never even thought about is because, you know, what I think is, and I have a girlfriend who's an artist. And
yeah, that's right.
She writes and she takes outside songs. She does both. You know, it's important to artists to write so they feel, so their artistic cup is full.
Yes.
But then she put out 6 songs, right? And so she wrote 3 of them. She did a John Mayer cover because. She didn't cut the John Mayer cover for a record, but in order to make this last little set of songs that Lindsay did, she was like, her and Christian Bush, who produced a record.
Gotcha.
He said, hey, go and remake your favorite album all by yourself with all the instruments. And so she did. She did all of Continuum, made all the instruments, the whole thing.
I want to hear that.
Oh, dude, it's fantastic.
She's so
and
talented.
It's not out, and it's fantastic,
she
right?
She redid Continuum?
The
That's
whole
like
record.
not a small record to mess around with doing.
the whole. Do I have?
That's an intense record to recreate.
Can you find Gravity over here? So she makes the whole
record. That's amazing. What a smart idea.
And it was never supposed to be put out. Like, it was just for her to kind of find herself musically.
So she's going to put that out?
No. She put Stop This Train only on this EP. And so she wrote three other songs. And so she took a song from Ryan Hurd, who's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And a song from Caitlin Smith, who are close. And it didn't have any relation to her. But she was like, these songs are so good, I just have to take outside songs too.
That's awesome.
And for me, I was always like, okay, take outside songs so people will buy tickets to your shows. But the merch thing is crazy, because if they're coming, they're also buying your merch.
They are. I'm such a believer in the outside song, man.
Here, I'm gonna play. Yeah, I would if I were you too, because you're writing them. Yes, I would hope that you were a believer of the outside song. If you weren't, I'd be like, dude, we need to.
I just want more of it. I want more writers to just write the best song in the room and just, you know.
I want to play you. This is not out anywhere, and she'll kill me for having this out. But she did Gravity. Just she did everything on this by herself, from the keys to the percussion to the all of it.
It's my favorite. One of my favorite records ever, man.
Me too.
She's playing all the guitar. Man.
She's doing everything that you hear.
She is.
Guitar. She sat in a room and did all of every sound. I listen to all the time.
That's so magic, man.
And we're going to go watch John Mayer together, because we're like nerds for John. He's so good.
So am I. I'm the biggest nerd for him. Can I tell you a John Mayer story?
I'll match yours. Go ahead.
When I was a kid, when I was like 20, I was in college. I went to see him at Roanoke College. I was obsessed, man. I was like, he had hung the moon. And we followed him after the show to like this little restaurant. And I was like, saw him over there, and I went up to his booth. I was like, John, I'm such a big fan. I just wanted to say hi and introduce myself. And he's like, do y'all suck my dick?
That sounds like something he would say, dude. Like, straight up.
I was so scared.
Like, not like.
And I thought I was going to have to, like, do it.
And I bet you were stunned. Like, is he being serious or not?
I was 20 years old. Yeah. I know. I had no idea. I wasn't in the music business really then. And he's like, I'm just joking, man. Come sit down. Come have dinner with us. And I was like, oh, yeah. I don't know what to do now.
I've had. Because I've probably. And again, I don't think in real life John and I would be like buddies.
Do you know him? Are you friends?
We've hung out probably 8 or 9 times.
You have?
Yeah. But not like, he's such an artist.
Yeah.
And from someone, I'm nuts myself, and I'm all over the platform as far as I'm moody and I'm crazy and I'm OCD and I'm. To be different,
we all are.
You've got to be really different. You're not just different in part of your life.
Yeah.
So the most creative people, the people that change the world that are the most creative, aren't just creative in their little space that's changing your world. They're really nuts all over the place, and it takes that kind of person.
I agree.
And he's nuts. I'm nuts. And sometimes I would say he'd be in the worst mood, sometimes he'd be in the greatest mood, and I just got tired of guessing. So I was like, and I never want to meet my heroes. And musically, he's my favorite. No, never.
He's musically my favorite, too, yeah.
He's just my favorite.
Me too, man.
I remember him once. We were maybe Houston. And it's been so long, who cares? Some girl came up to him, and we were back in the back, and some girl came up and was like, hey, I'm a huge fan.
Oh, God.
And he was like, hey, can I see your butthole?
Same kind of thing. That is so funny, Bobby.
And she was like, what? And I was like, he was like, I need to see your butthole.
How do we have the same exact story?
And I don't, and before she actually showed it or didn't, because she was just like, I don't know what to do.
Oh.
He was like, let's take a picture. And he took a picture and sent it around. But he was like.
So that's his shtick. That's his thing.
It was like, I need to see your butthole.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Yeah.
That's his thing.
That's his thing. And I've had some really good experiences and some really bad experiences. And some just middle ones.
Bad ones?
Yeah, not where he's mean to me. He's just, sometimes he's just not. He doesn't have a mood where even though he's in a bad mood, it's okay.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because I was in his time and his space. And it, I have no problem with super creative people.
Yeah.
I have no problem with super weird people being weird.
Super weird people.
Because that's what they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't expect someone to have these wild new thoughts and be so different than everyone else and still be the same.
So true. Look at Kanye, man. Yeah.
Nuts. But a genius.
Like, but a genius.
The Tesla guy.
Oh,
I bet you think he's nuts. That dude probably eats poop, and it's probably like nuts. Oh, like, oh, I bet Elon Musk. Like, I don't. I'm just saying that.
But he probably does. In little, he's little, so like, weird. Tiny pieces on the plate.
But you have
to
be
a cannibal for all we know.
You have to be that weird to change the world.
You're so right, dude. Believe that you, yeah.
And if you're that weird, those are the people that make the differences and change the world. Like, so I don't know that. No one's ever talked.
Are you reading
this.
That book called The Originals? Is that what it's called?
No.
It's all about this.
About eating poop?
About eating poop. And yeah, it's like, you should read it. Everybody's talking about it.
I haven't read it.
It's just how about to be original and how the originality changes and moves the needle.
Don't you think like super original people like have no choice but to be original?
Yeah, I agree.
It's like, you can read all the books you want.
David Bowie. Like, he had no choice to be David Bowie. Yeah, you're right.
It's harder to not be you.
Yeah, it is, to conform.
If you're just so different.
Yeah.
Like, I've tried to not be me.
You have.
I've tried to be, like, just a dude who's just always a nice guy and is just always Then it's like, that's just not me. I am, and I try to find the positive in things a lot. And I went to a lot of therapy, and I try to, but I'm still me.
Yeah.
And I'm nuts, and I know it. And I'm and my relationships suffer because of it. And I just find my strengths, and I try to stay to them, and I try to work on my weaknesses. Yeah. But I know I'm never going to be good at certain things, and I know I'm always going to work really hard. But I'm nuts. I don't eat poop nuts, but nuts. But you're nuts too.
You're really good at interviews.
We'll see, because I want to play here because Ross had a deal. You were an artist in the UK, but you're from Virginia, which is weird.
Yeah.
How did you end up as a UK recording artist?
Man, I started going to New York in college, playing The Bitter End every month, kind of going back and forth and just playing songwriter nights there, and started meeting guys at labels that would come out to The Bitter End. I idolized that place because it's like where Dylan started, and I met a few guys who worked. Had a little label called Phonogenic Records, and they had signed Natasha Bedingfield.
By the way,
I love Natasha.
I love Natasha. And I don't know your relationship with her.
I did too.
But as a person and as an artist,
she's amazing.
Her brother Daniel's a little nutty.
I know. I hung with him a little bit.
He's a little nutty, but Natasha was really nice.
They have another brother who's even more nutty.
Really?
A younger brother.
I assume they're all nuts, but still, like genetically, you have to be. Again, same thing. But you can be nutty and be awesome.
Yes.
She was always fantastic to
me.
She
was, and I always wonder, where is she now? I always think about that. Yeah. She was so great.
In pop, you can kind of go away.
You do. They just go away in pop.
They discard you.
They do, don't you? And you can't come back.
It's so hard.
But in country, you can come back.
In country, like, it's fun to come back. It's cool to come back.
It's cool to come back.
People want to
Chris
see.
Chris Stapleton's the ultimate comeback, in a way. I mean, he was always here doing it.
Stapleton was different because people didn't know him.
No, but we all did.
Outside of our bubble.
We all knew it, yeah. Maybe for us, he's a comeback, yeah.
Outside of the book, because Stapleton's writing stuff for everybody for a long time. Yeah. If you knew the Steel Drivers, if you knew that kind of
stuff. That's what I meant. Yeah, Steel Drivers, yeah.
But people love, just generally in America, our society, we love to see someone rise from the ashes. Then we love to knock them down.
They do.
Because we think they're getting too big, and then we love to see them rise back up again.
Yeah.
That's what, for some reason, we have this weird thing of, we want to see the underdog win.
I know.
But if the underdog starts to get full of themselves, which even if they're not, we assume they are, we want to see them fall and get busted with 9 prostitutes.
Kind of like Kanye.
In the back of an ice cream
kind
truck.
Of turned on Kanye. Well, Kanye kind
Kanye's
of
nuts
brought
too.
It on himself. But
so you're playing at this. You're playing at The Bitter End.
Yeah. So these guys offered me a deal that had Phonogenic Records. My lawyer was the Scripps lawyer at the time, and he had both of us. And me and the Script basically got the same exact record deal at the same time.
The band, the Script.
The band, the Script. They're
from a.
Ireland.
Are they
from
Ireland?
Yeah.
I did a couple shows with them.
You did?
They're really
so
good.
Awesome.
Yeah, they're really good.
So we both moved over to London about the same time.
Really?
And started working on our records. And
I haven't thought about them in forever.
I know.
The Script.
They're another one. Where are they?
And I wonder if they're still if they're still big overseas.
I think they are kind of still big.
They could probably go back to Ireland and be awesome, but
crush it.
Like,
don't do it. Oh, you're playing Script.
I was going to play a little bit of the Script real quick before I was going to play you. Like, Which song? Let's see.
Oh,
here.
The best one was Break Even.
Oh,
right.
Yes, this was the jam.
This was the jam of the century,
this
dude.
This was the jam.
If I break, you won't break even. When is too soon to cut this on a country
artist? Never, never. There are no rules.
I love this. Would be a great song,
and people wouldn't even know it.
You think?
I don't think they would. I mean,
I'm gonna do this. Brandon Ray.
Brandon Ray, by the way, is my favorite human and artist. He was one of the first people I brought in here.
I'm still alive, but I'm barely breathing.
This song's the jam, dude.
Just pray to a God that I don't believe in.
Oh, these lines.
Cause I got time while she got freedom.
I haven't thought about the script in forever.
Cause when her heart breaks, no, I don't break even. The best days will be some of my worst.
And you brought it back. And then it's like, how am I supposed to get
Oh, it was so good.
So you and these guys go to England together.
Yes.
Okay.
So I was like in the back of the studio with them while they were making this record.
For real?
Yeah. And they were coming to my shows. And like, Ross, we're so... Because my record came out before them.
That's
crazy.
That's the jam.
And they went on to be hugely successful.
For a couple songs?
For a couple of songs.
Yeah, I mean, really. They were...
Let's think about my life path, man. Like, I had two songs that kind of did okay, but then it kind of...
In the UK?
It kind of dissipated.
What was your biggest song as a solo artist? Because I don't have much of your solo
all
stuff.
She wrote.
All she wrote. Okay.
Nobody out there wants to understand.
Oh, man.
Nobody out.
Dang, dude, you had a sound.
I loved Oasis, man. I wanted to
dude,
be.
Dude, that's what that is.
I
You're
wanted
right.
to be Oasis
that,
so
that's
bad.
That's it. It's like the. It's like the Southern American Oasis.
Southern American Oasis. Feels
so it's like Skinner and Oasis meet
Skinner.
For a pop record. Wow. So how'd that song do in the UK?
That was like, it got to like 12 or something on the UK chart. Which was,
were you ever famous over there as an artist?
Like for a minute. Like
really?
Maybe a second of like a, there was a lot of posters of me around London and the UK and like, for like a hot second.
That's cool.
My second song didn't do as well.
What was that one?
It's called Found You.
Oh, yeah.
I will say the artist dream never does truly die. As much as I suppress it, and like I'm happy doing what I'm writing and producing, I always do secretly want to do like a Gorillaz type band.
With all
like,
cartoons where no one knows it's you.
Where no one knows behind a stage.
I'm in. If you want to do let it, me know.
I do always dream of it, like you know,
that
go,
so,
leave it on a tour bus. I've always wanted to do the tour bus thing, dude.
Oh, you don't.
I've never gotten to do that.
If you're a germaphobe, because we go out and when we do the Raging Idiots, we tour hard.
I know you do.
And people don't. I mean.
What do you mean germaphobe? You mean because you're shaking?
You're on a bus with all the 100 people.
It's recycled air. Just
it's
constantly,
just the air just, and there's one little bathroom and there's the, and you're in little bunks and you're living at a... It's to be in a band and travel on a bus is gross.
It is, dude. And
I would imagine it's like being a fourth grade teacher. It's like that kind of gross. And as soon as you move in, like all the germs just infest the walls.
Oh.
And you have to... And we will go... And you get a bus, and we could fit 12 on a bus, right?
Yeah.
And we would get the bus, and it would be, you know, me, and then obviously Eddie. And then we would just go fill our group. Like, for example, we're doing like 5 shows, and Brandon Ray is coming out and doing these shows with us.
That's right.
Because I'm like, Brandon, you got to come play. Like, we're doing Stagecoach. Come play with us.
That's amazing. You
know, we're
bringing
like
that.
Route 91. Come play with us. We're doing Faster Horses. Like, the weird thing is...
So you're the reason he's playing all those crazy shows?
Yeah.
Because I was like, how is Brandon playing all those crazy shows? Like, next level shows.
That's how, yeah.
It's amazing.
But he's... I had to get Brandon... Because here's the thing about Brandon Ray. If you're listening right now, just remember that you heard
Brandon
this.
Ray.
Brandon Ray is going to be a monster.
I agree.
And when he's a monster, it's going to be like... I remember when Brandon Ray was playing in the Raging Idiots.
That's amazing.
And it's the same thing with Kelsey.
He has that thing. Yeah, Kelsey.
Kelsey Ballerini played in the Raging Idiots.
She did, didn't she?
We were her first.
I forget that.
We were her first ever tour. Ever.
Gosh, that's crazy.
In life.
So the Rage EP is just the new vehicle.
So the new vehicle so it's like for Kelsey, new artists. And
there should maybe be like a fee. To we're like the, tour with the Rage EP.
The
like
fee
down
is
down the road, like a 20 years down the road. There's a fee.
We should pay them. We do pay them. You know what? I do pay them. To be honest, that's the fee. But wow, but Brandon Ray is awesome.
Brandon Ray is awesome,
and man. You're awesome because man, you sound. That, I, who knew? How about this? As I chose,
this was my favorite one. This was the free download in the UK. It was like the first time they'd done the free iTunes download. It was the highest downloaded song in the UK history.
You were the free download the first.
This one was, yeah.
Really? Like there's a and what's the story? Morning Glory. There's part of that record that's that's real. A lot of instrumentation.
Yeah.
That's, I hear, when you say Oasis.
That was my dream, dude, to be those guys.
Did you ever watch the Oasis documentary?
I want you so bad, been hearing about it.
It's so good.
I hear it's so real.
They're so nuts.
They're but again, so nuts.
You're talking about
true
creative
artists.
People.
I know.
Doing creative things. And part of being creative is that you're not like other people, so you're nuts.
Have you seen the Backstreet Boys documentary?
Yeah, I watched that.
I love that
You know what was funny to me about that is the fact that Brian couldn't sing. And I don't know if that was real or if it was really contrived. Because as someone who also makes TV shows,
yeah,
my guess would be because I don't know.
It's a thing. It's a mental block. I've worked with them in the studio here on a song.
Okay, now you're going to be able to shed more light on this. Let me tell you what I think. Tell me I'm wrong. Okay?
Yeah,
I think it's probably a thing, but for sake of the documentary, you take things that are a 6 and you make them a 9.
Yeah, it's a real thing. It's an actual medical thing. I forget the name of it, but it's a
mental
medical. It's actually medical.
So is something happening with his body and his throat or his head?
Something about his throat. I can't remember. Kevin described it to me, but we broke him of it in the studio.
Oh, you did. So he's not suffering from that anymore.
Like, Brian, sing this like Blackstreet. Like, and he was like, oh,
Blackstreet, like No Diggity.
Yeah. Like No Diggity.
Like, okay. Yeah.
And immediately he was like, and he just nailed it. And he like came out of his shell.
You ever seen Major League 2? Where Rube can't throw the ball back to the pitcher until he starts reciting the Playboy?
Oh my gosh.
That's what it reminds me of when you're like, hey, sing Blackstreet. And he's like, oh, you know, hey,
and it comes back.
And he's like right back. But it's like, hey, sing, you know, The Call. And
yes.
He's like, change.
Exactly. Craig Wiseman was talking about this today about mental block. Like Tiger Woods has everything it takes to be the number one golfer in the world every year. But it's his mental that
takes
Sergio
had that issue until yesterday. Like, Sergio lost so many. He had all
mental.
The talent.
It's all mental. For all of us in every field, right? Your field, my field.
Yeah, it's all fields.
It's all fields, isn't
it's
it?
It's all fields.
You got to be in the game mentally, like in that little silver lining zone of just magicness.
And there
right?
are times where I break down. I think there are times where
we're all human.
So he's back.
Yeah.
So would you be willing to say that Backstreet's back? All right.
All right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
So wait.
The ACM moment was my favorite performance of the night. I was on my chair, like losing
you
my
worked
mind.
With Back. I didn't know this part. I don't know because I feel like I've learned everything. I know the
this song's not out yet.
Okay. Wait. So what? You worked with them on a new song?
So we wrote a song. Me and Josh Keir wrote a song with Dustin Lynch. The Dustin didn't cut, and Backstreet somehow heard it. And loved it and came to town and cut it with me and Josh.
Really?
Yeah, it was crazy.
Isn't it weird that Kevin's like 45, right?
Yeah.
To me, it's weird, one, that they're still called the Boys, but that's just their name.
I know.
It's their name.
We're thinking if they did a country thing, it could be the Back Road Boys. That was actually Keith Urban. Saying that. I shouldn't take credit for that.
They
that
just
was Keith.
Have to be the Backstreet Boys. Just like boys to... But...
Men to... What could they change it to?
They can't. They just can't. It's weird they're so southern, though, because they're from Kentucky. Like
they are. I never
like Brian's from Kentucky.
I
Kevin's
know.
From Kentucky.
They're
Nick's
so
from Florida.
Southern.
They're so southern.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Here's a story for you. So I dated a girl whenever I was probably 20 years old or so. And right before we dated, she dated Nick Carter for like a year and a half.
Oh, my gosh.
So I was like,
she dated Nick before and then
before.
You?
Yeah, she took a step down. Yeah, she definitely. And it was a tough act to follow.
No, come on.
It was a tough. So you just worked with them. Did you do any of the stuff with them in Florida Georgia Line?
No, that was Joey. Yeah.
Okay.
Joey Moore did that.
So how did you end up getting with the Backstreet Boys straight up? Just
because
the song
crazy. Their manager reached out and they're like, the boys would like to come to Nashville and work with you. And
I was like, okay.
Man, your life. Look
crazy.
At you.
It was crazy.
Why do people like you so much?
I don't know.
I mean, weird. I like you, it's but weird. How do people hear about this? Hey, I'm going to play you something here. Let's see. What else? How about, oh, I got to ask you about this. Because Shane McAnally and I were talking about this.
Is he talking smack?
No, not at all. But we're talking about how so many songs, you can just take four chords and make them sound like every song.
Yeah.
And you guys had the instance where you had to put Gnarls Barkley on the song, on the Brett Eldredge song.
Oh, yeah. So just getting out ahead of the lawsuit thing.
Right. Now, let me put you here. Hold on. This is that beat of the music. Which is a great song. And I remember Brett coming in and being like, man. Because Brett wrote this with you guys, right?
Yeah.
And Brett being like, man, I was like half asleep. And I get like this thing and we got in and we wrote it. Okay, that's that one. Lose My Mind is one. Drunk on Your Love. Which one is it?
Has the CeeLo?
Yeah.
Lose My Mind.
Okay. But you did all these songs, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So is this the one? Okay. No, hold on. You make there it is. Crazy. They're not that close. They're the same, but it's one. Like, Ross, I like to call people out and be like, for sure.
So you're saying we gave up a piece of that song?
I think you would have lost anyway. But I don't. I just, if I were on the jury.
You think we'd have lost anyways, yeah.
If I'm on the jury, I don't. It's. I thought, if anything, here's Brett Eldredge.
We should have changed them.
Here's Gnarls Barkley.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's one word.
Wow.
There have been so many. Britney Spears went crazy in her song, too.
She did.
It's just happened too many times for that, just that snippet.
And they would have never heard the song.
I don't know. They have a wonderful way of finding money. People have a wonderful way of finding money.
Right. Especially estates of like Sam Cooke and stuff, like the Marvin Gaye estates.
I definitely. And
we should have just changed it. You make me crazy.
You know why you didn't? Because that's so universal.
Brett didn't want to change it. Because it was like your mind went to like a hit song. That's why we wanted to keep it.
But I don't even think, like, oh, you're even talking me into it now. But I don't even think that it's.
They had a poster on Music Row, Bobby, like for the writers of that song. Like they had a poster like, congrats to Danger Mouse, first number one song.
What?
They had a poster.
You're serious?
Yeah, I'm serious.
Wow. So you had
to. Isn't that funny?
You added CeeLo and Danger Mouse.
Yeah.
To that song. Yeah. Just those two.
And we still can't get him on the phone. I'm trying to get a co-write. I can't get him on the phone.
Huh. I'm going to play it again.
Thomas Rhett did it on a song too. Sam Cooke's Family or something.
Thomas Rhett did it on Vacation with Lowrider.
Well, that's the second one Thomas Rhett did then. Because they did it on his first song.
Really?
Because that Sam Cooke's daughter was at the BMI Awards and accepted a BMI Award.
See, I didn't know that.
For a different one.
Crash and Burn.
Oh, and you
Chain
know,
Gang.
You know what? And Stapleton wrote that too. Stapleton, and I asked Chris, I was like, hey, did you not
they probably
knowing,
don't talk about it.
Yeah. No, it wasn't that. I said, hey, did you actually use Sam Cooke's? Because I want to play some of this. It's funny you bring this up.
It's
because I say, did you actually use, because it's, that's the sound of the man, hey, working on a chain, gang, oh, don't you know?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That's like
the
original. And so Crash and Burn was.
Again, it's not enough, I feel like, to have done it, but they would have.
I actually thought they used part of the song as a sample, though.
Oh, see, well, exactly.
And it wasn't. And Chris was like, no. And I was like, oh.
Baby, yeah. Deja
vu again. And this is a great point. It's almost impossible now to really do something that sounds like nothing else.
It is.
I don't think you would have lost that lawsuit.
Is there...
I don't think you would have lost the lawsuit because it's one freaking word.
I know.
It's not...
What?
Yeah. It's not... What's the song? Blurred Lines.
Blurred Lines. That ruined it for all of us. That ruined it for all of us, though.
That makes y'all have to watch out. Or you're going to owe $7 million like they did. Like, it's like, if you don't get ahead of it...
They did, didn't they?
The Thomas Rhett song that I thought would get him in trouble, which didn't, was the slow one. And it sounded like Ed Sheeran.
Oh, God. That one was
cool. I mean, yeah, I even asked him. I was like, hey, have you heard anything about that?
Thinking Out Loud?
Thinking Out Loud from Ed Sheeran, and Thomas Rhett's was Die a Happy Man. And I was like, huh, those sound very similar. And by the way, preface, I love Thomas.
Yeah.
Great dude. But then I asked him about that. He goes, no, they haven't. They haven't reached out at all.
Ed probably just doesn't care.
And Ed got sued for the same song by somebody else.
He did. That's right.
Somebody from American or UK Idol.
Yeah, I remember that.
My point isn't that everybody's stealing songs. My point is it's hard
now. It's hard to come up with original stuff. Yeah, it's all recycled.
There are just so many sounds you can make.
There's not that many notes in the or chords.
The only person making new notes is Keith Urban. So if you don't get with Keith Urban, you're not getting any new notes.
That's a great question, though. Who is there? You said it's hard to make a piece of music that sounds like nothing else. That's like what I try and do every day in my life. I try to, at least. Like, is there anything right now that you're that excited about?
And before I answer that, I'm going to say this in comedy, because I'll do stand-up.
Comedy's got to be similar, right?
It's very similar.
How do you come up with new jokes?
Every concept
has
been talked about 100 times.
Interesting.
And we're like-minded people, most of us. Yes. If I'm going on stage as a comedian,
so many experiences.
We're like-minded. We're probably sad internally, and that's why we're on stage looking for love. And I'm not kidding here. I'm being serious. Like, we don't get on stage and try to get the love of other people that you don't know.
Wow.
Because you just feel like it. There's a lot of similarities.
Interesting.
And darkness inside of comedians.
Interesting.
It's like the sad person wants to make everybody laugh, and you're searching for love somewhere. Wow. And so you've lived similar paths.
Yes.
The good-looking rich kid's never the famous comedian.
So true, man.
They're just not, because it comes from somewhere else. So, similar experiences, similar mind frames.
Yeah.
The topics of the world are similar.
Yeah.
You're going to get 1,000 jokes that are somewhat the same.
Yeah.
And so, it's tough. What I do is I try to do as much about me and my personal.
Makes it original.
And even then,
your stories.
There's probably 100 jokes like it too.
The things that have happened to you in your life.
And that's how.
Is there enough material of real things that have happened to you?
I wrote a book, and the book, you know,
yeah,
and it did well. It was a bestseller.
Yeah, it's amazing,
and it was fine. And there's enough material in that for like one act.
Wow.
But then again, you know, as we're about to cut the special, I'm starting to work on the second act, and it takes a year or two.
Do you write it all yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it's all you go out and test it and suck.
Okay.
Yeah.
But don't big comedians have teams?
Like Chris Rock will write something, or I'll have somebody say, hey, and they'll work on stuff
Chris,
together.
Yeah. Okay.
Or he'll go out and practice it.
Okay.
And they'll be like, hey, what if you do this?
Okay.
And he'll try it. But the thing that like comedians do is they can go out. Like Chris Rock did it in Nashville at Zany's. He did 4 shows in like 2 nights.
Wow.
And just work material. And work
to,
material.
Just to work it.
Because it's not.
I'd love to see that.
Mike D did though.
Wow.
And he walks out with notes. And he's going through notes.
Wow. That's so cool.
The difference is, for me, if I take out my guitar, and I'm not a musician, I play guitar and I sing, and I don't do either very well, but I can practice and get muscle memory in playing a song and practice singing.
Yeah.
And I can sit in my room, or I can go somewhere and practice it. You can't practice telling jokes to a wall.
Yeah.
You have to go out and actually tell it and see it
how
works.
It reacts.
And the funniest things I've ever written bomb hard. And I'm like, oh, this is going to kill. And I'm like, blah, blah.
Wow.
Well, that didn't work. And the stuff that you don't think sometimes, you're like, I'm just going to throw it out there and see what happens.
Wow.
It's like, that worked? Let me try it again and just switch it up a little bit.
Interesting.
But same thing with comedy as music is what I'm saying. Yeah, it's the art. It's just art, period.
I love that, and that you tweak it and hone in on it.
Art has been done a million times, a million different ways. Like, good luck trying to find something completely original.
Yeah, absolutely.
But when you can, and occasionally somebody does, you're like, that's crazy. Who do you, like, okay, I'll ask you, who do you, because you asked me that right now, somebody you're like, they're changing the game a bit. Who is it?
Can it be in pop?
It can be anything you want. Like, I don't care who it is. I think it's fine for people to have a ton of different types of influences and music. Nobody has a playlist.
I think this Julia Michaels stuff is going to be so special because.
Julia Michaels?
Because she sings melodies that you don't hear, you know, and these are just.
This Julia Michaels?
Yeah.
Did you just know I had this up already, or did you just?
No.
No, I had this ready. This is what I was going to play.
For what?
I'm jealous.
This song here?
I'm overzealous.
I didn't know you were going to say this.
No, you didn't.
Look at my list here. It says Julia Michaels. This is what I've been listening to lately. Julia Michaels, Eric Clapton, Layla from Unplugged, the new Michelle Branch, Weezer. Like, I'm not lying. This is a lot.
Dude. Weezer is one of my favorite bands ever, by the way. That was where I was raised on.
That's why I wear my glasses. Weezer and Buddy Holly. That's
why
I wear dark green glasses.
Yeah. I mean, Weezer, like, built my foundation, dude.
Yeah, me too.
Judge me, because if you did, baby, I would judge you.
Was this the song that you were going to say?
Because I got issues.
No. For that question?
This is one of the artists I was going to pull up
that's
like,
crazy,
completely
dude.
New.
Yeah, I feel like that about her.
I swear.
Me and Shane wrote with her a few times.
Oh, you know? I have no idea
when
anything
she
about
came,
her.
when she would come to Nashville for writing trips, and me and Shane would always, we'd write these great songs with her. I should play some if I could find them. And we'd be like, Julia, why are you not an artist like right now? And she'd be like, well, I don't really want to be an artist right now. Just like Maren. She just wanted to write. And then she started writing those Selena songs and those Bieber songs. And like, she just got into that like silver zone of hit thing. And then realized, I guess, that she, yeah, I don't know.
I had no idea you even knew her.
Yeah. I kind of, you know, we wrote with her a few times. So
that's knowing her.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny.
But I really do. I keep hearing this song on the radio. Every time I hear it on the radio, I'm like, that is just so fresh. Like,
it's the I Heart on the Verge pop song, and Seacrest was like, hey, check this out. And I was like, whoa.
It's so fresh.
Like, it's, yeah.
We all have issues, and like giving them to each other. So like, just, and the and melodies. Just,
but
and
sonically,
like,
too.
Sonically. Yeah, I got issues. I know, dude. And one of them is how bad I need you.
I got issues. Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh.
One of them is how bad I need you. I feel like we could talk for 4 hours, Ross.
I know. They probably made that on a laptop. Sorry, yeah. You're so good.
You made
at this.
That on your laptop?
No, I'm saying that they probably made that whole track on like on a laptop.
Have you been writing any of the Taylor Swift country stuff?
No, this is news to me.
Okay, news to me too. I was just looking at your reaction to see if we could break something.
Are you joking?
Yeah, yeah. To completely.
Oh my gosh.
She's recording in town right now.
No, she's not.
And she's working on. She,
with
but
who?
No, but
with
nobody.
Max?
But nobody knows what's going on.
What do you mean? I want to go. I'm going to go stand outside the studio.
Well, no one knows. Like, and people are arguing
with Max.
Should she do pop? Everything's on lock.
It's got to be with Max.
The thing about her too is like she and
why Nashville. I'm calling Nathan Chapman right now.
You should, you know.
Nathan.
And here, you know, you tell me it'll never come out of the lockbox. But here's the thing. The only thing I would say about her in this project is people are like, well, if she does country, she won't make as much money. Here's the thing about Taylor.
That'd be amazing.
If she does a country album, it's going to go immediately pop as well. It's going to hit two formats at the same time.
I know. And it'd be a good move, wouldn't it?
I think it'd be a brilliant.
Brilliant.
Move.
Of course she would do
because
that.
Because she'd be back at pop, but not
my
meaning
gosh.
To.
Why is she so smart?
It would
How
be.
Is she so
and
smart?
I don't know that she's doing this. This is just my theory. Like, if I were
It'd
her,
be brilliant.
I would do a
it's
country
brilliant.
Record right now so because it would go pop as well. And it would put her back into. And then she could do the pop record.
She'd
and then
get
she's
the
just.
Love of. Oh, everything. My God. Why are they so smart? How are they so smart?
I don't know if they've done that yet, Rod. I mean, I don't know that that's the case. But you find out, let me know. And I was just testing you to see if you knew anything. And
that's
you,
amazing.
I watched your face, too.
That's
and you,
amazing.
You didn't react the way I wanted.
I love that. I love that.
Well, I appreciate you coming by.
Hey, this was literally the best interview I've ever done in my life.
I'm
serious. This really was. I'm not joking.
Well,
you're so good at this, and you're so good at asking these questions. And
I don't think I'm good at it. I'm just really interested in it.
You're genuine. You're genuine. And that's what makes you so good at your job.
Well, I appreciate all the compliments. You are equally, if not more, as awesome. And
this was a fun talk, man.
I'm really interested in this. And I would tell you the truth. I just don't think you would have lost a crazy case. I understand getting out ahead of it. I do get because it would start to freak me out too. Because you also just don't want to be in a lawsuit.
No,
like really,
I know.
You just don't want to have that hanging over your head either for freaking 18 months.
I would move away and like have to quit.
It's
or something.
Just like I'm getting sued, and so everything else you're doing is quite. So just put the.
I know. I'd feel like a fraud. The more success you have, the more you feel like a fraud. At least I do. The more fraudulent you feel.
Oh, me for sure.
There's a line in a movie I remember.
I'll be back. That was Terminator, and it's a whole different thing. But
it was
still,
a Terminator? What? I'll be back?
No, that was just a line in a movie. Ross Cobran wrote all the songs and has all the money and all the friends and is all the cool
gosh,
guy.
Come on.
Anybody cool that you're working with right now?
Brandon Ray. He's honestly my new favorite. Doing the new Brett Eldridge record.
Yeah.
Going to be cool. Dustin Lynch. My two little Billy Currington. The Back Road Boys.
Everybody. If I were to say, and I'm not, this is not me, I would never do it because I've never done this in my life. Because I have the people that I write songs with. Like I write with Christian Bush a bit. I write with
Phil Barton,
Eric Paslay. Like these are the people that I know because I don't feel comfortable around people.
Yeah.
Just generally,
do you
want to
write country songs?
Huh?
Do you want to write country songs?
No, because I'm not serious.
You want to write for Raging Idiots?
I want to write. I write funny songs. Brandon Ray and I write together a lot, and
you
he's
do?
Funny.
He
Brandon,
is.
Brandon's funny.
He's a good writer,
and he's funny.
So you're writing a comedy record?
Well, look at that. You see that plaque right there? We had a number one comedy record, first of all, and a number one
Raging
kids
Idiots,
record.
Yeah. So you're doing your next Raging Idiots?
I'm just writing stuff, right? Regardless, I'm trying stuff.
I would love to write funny songs.
No.
I want to write funny songs.
Do you know what's funny is that people will come and say, I just need a change. Can I please try to write a funny song?
Yeah, that's how I am.
And you know who I write with a lot?
Who?
And I don't know if you're friends with him or not, but who I write with a lot is Lee Thomas Lee Miller.
You do?
He's my best friend.
He is?
Like,
he's one of my favorite humans in this world.
The only house I've ever been to on a weeknight in the past 5 years and had dinner.
You go out and have dinner with the family?
Yes.
You do?
Like, he is that, like, we're that.
I didn't know
that. That's my, because who talks about it? Like, what? So do you go around and brag about who your friends are? No, you don't walk around and go, hey, you know who my really good friend is? But my point is, like, he's like the.
Does he have a charging station in his house for you?
No, he doesn't. Okay. He doesn't. He does. But he does live, you know, down in like.
Brentwood.
Yeah.
A little too far.
It is a little too far.
Yeah.
But him and I are right, because he's fine. I did a rider's round.
You want to come hang with our kids one night?
I don't.
You can come
by. Let me tell you how intimidating this was for me, okay? So I write stupid songs, right? And they're stupid songs and whatever. And I wrote Walker Hayes a little bit too.
You did?
Yeah.
He's an interesting writer.
He's very wordy.
Yeah.
And
very arty, artist, creative type. But, like,
so I have my friends I feel comfortable genius. Not being stupid in front of, I guess is my answer, was my thing. But if someone were to call, if I were to call and go, hey, Ross, can we write a song? Like, could you fit me in? How long would it take you to fit me in?
Dude, for you, I'd do it that week.
Okay.
Whatever you want.
Okay, that's not the answer. I was like September maybe. That's what I was hoping. No. I could keep it real. Because after it'd be like, Billy, what's your name? I appreciate you having me over at your house.
Billy?
Yeah.
I've got
a story. Listen to this story. Okay. I'm going to leave you with this one. So Lee invites me to do a writer's round, right? And he's like, hey, Tin Pan South, will you come do a round with me?
And I didn't know that was an option.
And it's all
I would have invited. I didn't know that was an option.
Just wait for this. It was miserable for me. It was the worst
Where
thing.
Where did you play?
We played at the listening room. And he's like, hey, come Rich, me and a couple buddies and come out and come do some songs. Because Lee and I had written a bunch of stuff together. Lee and I had written some hip-hop stuff together, too. We wrote this dumb song about Starbucks. And we did all this stuff. So I get out there, and he's like, hey, I want you to meet the two guys that are playing with you. And I walk in, and he goes, hey, this is Ashley Gourley, and this is Chris DiStefano. Two of the freaking biggest songwriters.
Best. Yeah.
And Lee's hilarious and has had so many hits, and hits that last the test of time, too.
His F.
Like, he wrote, like, In Color for Jamie Johnson.
Which just blows my mind every time.
And you're going to miss this.
And
he wrote It Ain't My Fault for Brothers Osborne. Like, he's still...
I forgot he wrote that.
Yeah, like, he's still putting them out.
It's crazy, man, his career.
And so Lee would go, like, I need to nail some song. And then here I go, I play something totally stupid, right? Like, whatever. And then DiStefano would sing a Carrie Underwood song better than... As good as...
Better than...
I mean...
I know, right? He's got the stomp
metal. Ashley, and he's got a bass drum on his foot.
He's intimidating to play rounds with.
I don't even know what I was getting into.
He has, like, effects
and then
stuff.
It goes over to Ashley, and Ashley's playing keys, and he's singing, you know...
Luke's.
He's doing Luke, and he's doing Cole, you know...
I know.
And then comes back around to me, and I'm like, guys, I don't know what you want me to do. I guess I'm going to play this song called When I Start Drinking. Boom, boom, boom. I mean, think about that.
That is so funny.
I was so out of my element.
That is so funny.
With like three of the biggest songwriters in town, and here I am up there playing songs in the middle of them. I felt so stupid.
No.
And I was like, Lee, I can't do that ever again. Like, that's just not... I'm not trying to be a song... I'm not you guys. Like, I know my talents. I can write some funny words.
Yeah.
And I can play about 12 chords.
I'm sure it was awesome, though.
No, it wasn't.
Come on, yeah, it was.
Not for me. It wasn't awesome. Ross Kaufman, I appreciate it. This has been fun.
Bobby, so fun. Thank you so much.
And let me know if you need anything. ever would need anything from me.
I'm doing a round soon. I'm gonna call.
Okay. Cool. Let me know. I might come watch if it's early enough. Yeah.
The Bluebird? Bluebird on the mountain.
You know, okay. I played the Bluebird for the first time. Like
you did?
With Pasley.
I wanna know when you do this stuff. I live right next to it. I'll come.
I don't tell anybody because I want to come watch.
I wanna come watch you play around.
No, you don't.
Come on.
And I'm telling you, I don't get affected because I've played everywhere. I've played the Opry twice.
You have?
Yeah. We played the Opry twice.
Amazing.
We've sold out the Ryman twice. So I've got to do everything awesome. But let me tell you this. Playing the Bluebird is a different thing.
Well, it's intense, amazing. Isn't it, dude?
People are sitting right on top of you.
You feel them.
And it's like the freaking Blue. Everything's the freaking... It's like the freaking Opry.
Yeah.
It's a freaking Bluebird.
I know.
It's the
I get freaked out at the Bluebird. The sound's not very good, and you're just kind of...
And it's not supposed to be.
It's not supposed to be. You're right.
And that's
what... About the song.
It's crazy. Well, good talk. This is a good... Listen, it, how long was this one? If these are never that long. These are never that long because they're usually only just pretty good. That's a good one.
It was only just pretty good.
All right, Ross Kaufman, good to see you, buddy.
I got a round coming with Lauren McKenna, Hillary Lindsay. I would, you think you're okay to do
I would
one?
Never,
okay,
ever. I sat with Hillary at the ACM. And
hey, I was right down from you. Did you know that? It was so crazy. We were on the other side of Hillary.
I was too big of a star to see you. So, I'm just kidding. Low Cash was sitting on my right.
I was next to Hillary on the other side.
Oh, no, I didn't see you.
On the other side of Hillary. In your row.
Yeah, I didn't see.
That's so funny.
And Lori, yeah, I was in a good group.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. It was fun. I love Lori.
Like, she's so good.
She's like the greatest.
She is the greatest human. We got to know her out there. She's we bummed an awesome. Uber ride off of her.
So you didn't get, you haven't spent much time with her until then?
No, never.
She's awesome.
She's amazing. I was in a round with her. I had to follow Girl Crush and Humble and Kind. I felt
just
like,
put your guitar down.
I did. Yeah. I was like, all right, I'm going to
pass.
Gonna skip this part of the round.
All right. We're going to go. Episode 51 is over. Thank you again to Blue Apron at 100 Flowers. And I hope everybody enjoys it. We'll see you next time.